640 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
You never really know what you're going to feel until you win that match point, and you can't really control your emotions or what goes through your mind, but you just figure that everything that you go through is so worth it just for this moment. What was it, 2 hours and 44 minutes out here in front of you? And
cheers and applause for Maria Sharapova, who after 2 hours and 44 minutes on the court made a triumphant return to Grand Slam tennis at the U.S. Open in New York. The Russian star defeated second-seeded Simona Halep of Romania in three sets, 6-4, 4-6, and 6-3, in a first-round match at the year's final Grand Slam event. And while some tennis writers are calling it an upset, as I told my producer, Bill Werkinger, before the show, Sharapova has now won all seven career meetings with Halep. The 30-year-old Sharapova received a wild card from the U.S. Tennis Association, which gave her a spot in the big competition as a courtesy to a former champion. Maria Sharapova won the hard court tournament in 2006, the second of five major titles she's won in her career. Now, Sharapova's career suffered a big setback at the 2016 Australian Open when she tested positive for the recently banned heart medication meldonium. Her suspension ended in April, and this was her first Grand Slam match in 19 months. And while Maria Sharapova has played in several tournaments since her suspension was lifted, she's also dealt with some physical ailments, including injuries to her left thigh and left forearm. Sharapova looked strong against Halep, though, and the sellout crowd of nearly 24,000 at Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York cheered her performance. When Halep's final shot went long, Maria Sharapova sunk to her knees and cried on the court. After getting up and shaking hands with Halep, Sharapova had this to say to the tennis fans in New York.
You sometimes wonder why you put in all the work, and this is exactly why.
Meanwhile, another player who continues to put in the work is Venus Williams. At the age of 37, Venus is the oldest woman in the field at the U.S. Open. The American star won her first-round match Monday in three sets against Victoria Kuzmova, a 19-year-old qualifier from Slovakia. The final score from New York, 6-3, 3-6, and 6-2. Elsewhere, Wimbledon champion Garbiñe Muguruza of Spain also got off to a good start, needing just over 1 hour to beat Varvara Lepchenko of the United States, 6-love and 6-3. Muguruza is seeded third among the women at the U.S. Open, while Venus Williams is seeded ninth. Now, in terms of those seedings, U.S. Open officials based them on the current men's and women's world rankings. The U.S. Open tennis tournament is one of the most popular sporting events held each year in New York. The U.S. Tennis Association says it expects about 700,000 fans to watch matches during the two-week tournament. Let's listen in now to a few fans at the USTA's Billie Jean King National Tennis Center, the home of the U.S. Open, and the players they would like to see.
Rafa, because he's the king of clay, and I'm just a huge fan of Rafa Nadal.
Probably Muguruza, because just Wimbledon champion. I haven't never seen her play before stylistically. She's sort of emerged very recently, kind of dominated the first set, so we saw that. And just sort of hopping around, watching, you know, a bunch of the new up-and-comers.
Mainly Roger Federer, because he's the all-time greatest player, and also Sharapova. I also am looking forward to see Shapovalov, since he's one of the newest stars, rising stars. So hopefully it's going to be great, everything.
Well, I just saw Stevie Johnson. That was really fun. So he's one of my favorites. And I'd like to see Madison Keys if I could. I just think she has a lot of potential to do well, and it's time for her to make a breakthrough.
You've been listening to a few tennis fans at the U.S. Open in New York City. It wouldn't surprise me if music mogul Jay-Z catches some of the tennis action at the U.S. Open. Jay-Z is a big sports fan, and let's face it, Jay-Z knows his way around New York.
But I tell you what, you're one composed individual. You didn't get rattled. You tucked in when you needed to tuck in. I thought you switched.
Well, I thought we had Jay-Z coming up with a little rap for us, but no, that was Conor McGregor. A little too early for Conor McGregor. But wait, my VOA producer, Bill Workinger, says Jay-Z is ready to go. Hit me, Bill Workinger, with some Jay-Z. 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 Nope, no Jay-Z. No Jay-Z. Come on now, Bill. I'm Sonny Young in Washington.
Yeah, I'm out that Brooklyn. Now I'm down in Tribeca, right next to De Niro. But I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra. And since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem. All of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pulled me back to that McDonald's. Took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus. Driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my top, sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely from
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In pro boxing, we've been taking a look at the recent Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight in Las Vegas, Nevada. The final figures aren't in yet, but Mayweather-McGregor could wind up being the most lucrative fight in history. Mayweather beat McGregor with a 10th-round technical knockout at the T-Mobile Arena in Vegas. Afterwards, both men hugged each other and had compliments for their opponent at the post-fight news conference. First, we'll hear from the 29-year-old McGregor.
But I tell you what, you're one composed individual. You didn't get rattled. You tucked in when you needed to tuck in. I thought you switched up your game plan 3 times. You came out looking to box. I thought you were being outboxed early on. You looked to play against the ropes like you looked to play. You were getting picked off there. And then you came in, hands up towards your forehead, dipped in forehead on the chest, and started to fight that kind of fight. I didn't anticipate that. Three game changes in the fight. That's what a true champion does. Much respect.
After the fight, Conor McGregor said he wished referee Robert Byrd hadn't stepped in and stopped the bout when he did. But Floyd Mayweather says Byrd made the right decision.
He's a hell of a fighter. And then, you know, I hear him talking about, you should let me go out on my back or go out on my face. No, the referee saves you because the referee is thinking about your future. Because you're still young, and we want you to be able to fight again someday. So the referee is saving you. He's not saving me. That's all I'm saying.
Floyd Mayweather is also saying he won't fight again, that this 50th consecutive victory will wrap up his great prize-fighting career. And we'll have more hard-hitting commentary from Namdi Hollywood Mweta, our reigning prince of pugilistics, later this week on the Mayweather-McGregor fight.
Galala! Great show, bro.
In Major League Soccer news, D.C. United goalkeeper Bill Hamid is leading a relief effort for the people in Sierra Leone.
On the night of August 13th, 2017, my family's native country of Sierra Leone was devastated by floods and mudslides, taking over 450 people's lives and another 800 people missing. Seeing this affect my family, from my grandmother to my aunts and uncles and cousins, makes me want to do something about it. With the help of DC United and Schools for Salon, a nonprofit benefiting children in Sierra Leone, we plan on auctioning off some special soccer jerseys to help aid and relief in Sierra Leone. Schools for Salon is a nonprofit I've worked with throughout the years and is currently on the ground in Sierra Leone providing water filtration systems, food, and emergency supplies. Any help you can give to help the people of this country would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Bill Hamid is auctioning off game-worn autographed jerseys, and he'll match dollar for dollar all funds raised through the auction, up to $2,000. For more information, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to go to this website, dcunited.com/Sierra/Leone. Once again, that address, dcunited.com/Sierra/Leone. In African football, the qualifying competition for the 2018 World Cup in Russia resumes later this week. Let's go group by group and take a quick look at the matches. In Group A, Guinea will host Libya in Conakry on Thursday, and Tunisia is at home against the Democratic Republic of Congo on Friday. The DR Congo and Tunisia each have the maximum 6 points from 2 qualifiers to top this group. Our VOA football fans will remember the top team in each of Africa's 5 qualifying groups will book a ticket to Russia next year. In Group B, Nigeria will host neighbor and reigning African champion Cameroon on Friday in Uyo, while Zambia is at home against Algeria on Saturday in Lusaka. The Super Eagles of Nigeria lead this group with the maximum 6 points from 2 matches. In Group C, Morocco will host Mali on Friday, and Gabon will go against visiting Ivory Coast on Saturday. The Elephants of Ivory Coast lead this group with 4 points from 2 qualifiers. In Group D, the Cape Verde Islands are at home Friday against South Africa, and Senegal will host Burkina Faso on Saturday. Burkina Faso and South Africa top this group with 4 points each from 2 matches. And finally, in Group E, the Cranes of Uganda will host the Pharaohs of Egypt on Thursday in Kampala, and Ghana will go against Congo Brazzaville on Friday in Kumasi. The Egyptians lead this group with the maximum 6 points from 2 qualifiers, followed by the Ugandans with 4 points. So the Cranes of Uganda can move to the top of the table with a victory Thursday in Kampala. Teams will play another round of qualifiers just a few days after this set of matches. Yes, I'm sure African football fans will be getting their kicks for this next round of African World Cup qualifying. Kick it!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Joining us once again here in a steamy Studio 22. I think I'm sweating, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Hot times in Studio 22.
Yeah, I guess they turned off the air conditioning. They figured we were close enough to the cool weather. They didn't need to turn on the air conditioner today, I guess.
Well, what's trending on this Tuesday, Andrew?
Well, the big big story here in the U.S. is Houston, Texas. Of course, it's the fourth largest city in the U.S., ravaged by a hurricane, massive flooding, once in 800,000-year flooding, catastrophic, devastating. And this has, of course, affected the sports world. There are two sports teams in Houston, Texas. There's the Houston Texans, which are the National Football League team, and then the Houston Astros in Major League Baseball. And a lot of people from those two leagues, National Football League and Major League Baseball, are coming together to try to support the city of Houston. So you have Houston Texans team owner Bob McNair donating $1 million to flood relief efforts.
Nice, nice.
The National Football League Foundation will match that $1 million donation, donating $1 million of their own. And this getting a lot of attention on social media today. Robert Kraft, who's the owner of the New England Patriots, he's going to match donations to the Red Cross up to $1 million. Now, that's getting a lot of attention because the Patriots are nowhere near Houston in terms of where they play. They are very near Houston in terms of the battles that they've had during the playoffs and the seasons going on. Two very good teams, rival teams. But a really nice move that he is putting his money there to help the city of Houston. Someone with a bit more of a connection to Houston is J.J. Watt. He's a defensive end for the Houston Texans. And he started a fundraising campaign the other day on social media, putting up $100,000 of his own money and then challenging everybody else to raise another $100,000 on top of that. Well, they got to that goal of 200,000 within just a couple of hours. So he changed it to 500,000. Then they hit that mark. Then he changed it again and again. It's now up to 1.5 million. It looks like they're about to break that mark. And I think they're just going to keep raising it from there on out. But a lot of people who are fans of the Houston Texans, fans of Houston as a city, and even people who are just sports fans or just citizens generally who want to contribute and try to help the city as they get through this flooding, they are donating to this campaign started by J.J. Watt. On the Major League Baseball side, the Major League Baseball League and the Major League Baseball Players Association are jointly donating $1 million to the flood relief efforts. So on both sides, you're seeing a lot of money and resources being put together to try to help the city.
And I think it speaks to what a big sports town Houston is, Andrew.
It is. It's a huge sports town. They love the Texans. They love the Astros. The Astros are actually doing quite well. I believe they have the best record in the American League in baseball, so they're looking hopefully to make a run towards the World Series. But that actually is a bit of a point of contention, the fact that Houston is such a big sports city, because there have been a couple of changes of venue as a result of the flooding and the storms. There was a football game that was supposed to be between the Houston Texans and the Dallas Cowboys. That was supposed to be held in Houston. It's now been moved to Dallas. So that, not too bad. Dallas is not too far from Houston, just a few hours away. Major League Baseball, the Houston Astros and the Texas Rangers, which usually play in Dallas, they were supposed to play in Houston. They actually ended up moving that game to Tampa Bay Rays Stadium in Florida, about 1,000 miles away, because the Texas Rangers reportedly refused to agree to move that game to Dallas because they would have had to play the rest of their season with a string of away games. So fans are really taking the Texas Rangers to task, saying that they were selfish by not agreeing to move this, that they had to move it to Florida. It's disrupting the teams. Whereas, you know, the Dallas Cowboys said, no problem, we'll host you in Dallas. We're going to try to help you out and support the team. The Texas Rangers were not willing to do that, and they're getting a lot of flack for that, including from Astros pitcher Lance McCullers, who tweeted out, "Classy as always, should be absolutely ashamed. Greed never takes off days, apparently. Stay strong. H-Town, we hope to be home soon." So a lot of people taking the Texas Rangers to task for not wanting to play in Dallas.
Well, from Texas, why don't we head to New York City, Andrew, where the year's final Grand Slam tennis tournament is taking place. I'm guessing Maria Sharapova might be trending.
She is indeed. It's being called perhaps the greatest first-round match at a tournament ever, between Maria Sharapova and Simona Halep, going the distance nearly 3 hours this first-round match. And many people on social media and many commentators said it felt more like a final or a semifinal than a first round. That was the caliber of play. Of course, Maria Sharapova is a five-time Grand Slam champion, coming back from that time off from the doping penalty that she served. So she's easily could be a top 10 player. So this is quite a matchup. But because of the ranking, she ended up playing Simona Halep in the first round. A bit of the, you know, luck or unluck of the draw for Halep, never beaten Sharapova in six tries, and make that seven now that she hasn't beaten her in. And it's so it's a tremendous match, even though if you're a Simona Halep fan, you're a little disappointed. Still great quality tennis. And Sharapova, people saying, showed more emotion on the court than she has in her entire career, collapsing on the court, overtaken by emotion, and she said she's back and she's ready to play.
What do you think of her chances of maybe winning another trophy in New York, Andrew?
You know, with Serena Williams out expecting her child, I think the door is open for Maria Sharapova. That's been the one big roadblock for her, is Serena Williams. Just like Sharapova's beaten Halep seven times, Halep's never beaten her. I think Sharapova's only beaten Serena maybe once out of 18 tries. So I think she's got as good a chance as any, but it's going to be very interesting to see if she can get through some of the other top 10 players, Garbiñe Muguruza, Caroline Wozniacki, other players who have beaten her before.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Sonny.
And that wraps up the August 29th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Famine Early Warning Systems Network, or FuseNet, a U.S. government-funded provider of information and analysis on food insecurity, is signaling that the hunger and nutrition situation in southeastern Ethiopia is deteriorating, with numerous households in the drought-ridden Somali regional state already experiencing severe food insecurity. Likewise in Kenya. Although the situation is not as dire, insufficient March to May rainfall has left people living in the country's arid and semi-arid regions at risk of crisis-level food insecurity in the near future. In 2011, the Horn of Africa suffered one of the worst droughts on record. The next few years saw subpar rainfall, which means that the hardest-hit regions did not have the chance to recover, either for growing grain or replenishing pasturage. Then came the 2015-2016 season and the abnormally warm El Niño phase of the global weather pattern. As a result, the most fragile regions in the arid Horn of Africa once again saw the deterioration of agricultural and livestock production, rising food prices, and a future wrought with hunger, malnutrition, and resulting diseases. Today, 7.8 million Ethiopians are suffering acute food insecurity, as are 2.6 million Kenyans. That is why the United States announced in early August that it will deliver more than $169 million worth of humanitarian aid for Ethiopia and Kenya. In doing so, the United States is scaling up emergency food assistance. The funds will provide such necessities as specialized nutrition supplies to treat malnourished children, safe drinking water, and essential health services. In Ethiopia, this assistance will provide food aid for about 3 million people. In addition to aid for Kenyans affected by the drought, the United States is also providing support for refugees in Kenya who have fled drought and conflict in their own countries. It is not a famine, but it is rising up to the levels of getting close to famine, said Matt Nims, acting director of Food for Peace at the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. That is why we want to act now, so that we're not into that stage.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at UpfrontAfrica.